Welcome to the Litflix podcast, episode 14, Ghost World by Daniel Clowes, along with a 2001 movie. We are books, movies, booze. So we read a book, watch a movie, have some drinks, and talk about it. Our episodes are explicit and they do contain spoilers. I'm Casey.
I'm Abby.
And tonight, then it's supposed to say tonight's episode.
That's fine.
Tonight I'm drinking vodka and juice. So yay.
What kind of juice?
It's like a pomegranate ice thing.
Oh, nice. That sounds good.
It is good.
I'm drinking Paradise Pucker by Rogue Brewery.
Oh, how's that?
It's gross.
Oh.
It says ale brewed with natural passion fruit, orange, and guava flavors, but it just tastes like apple cider vinegar.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it could be good.
Well, that's why I bought it. Plus, the label's cool. It's got lips.
That is cool.
And a sunset. What else could you want?
My absolute favorite beer is Ruby at McMenamin's.
Me too.
It's my favorite.
It's so good. And I thought this was going to be comparable, but like I said, it just tastes like vinegar.
You really like beer. I'm not a huge fan.
I usually buy it because it's cheap.
Okay.
But I do like beer. Also, that's another reason why I haven't thrown this one out is because I spent $5.99 on it. And I'm not. Listen, I'm not that rich.
That's quite a bit on a bottle that size, considering I spent like $25 on my practical gallon of vodka.
I mean, it's a pint.
Okay. But it's beer.
And it's gross beer.
And it's gross. So, I was watching Veronica Mars on Hulu because they added all of the episodes.
Oh, okay.
And I was on season 2, episode 13, and one of the characters looked over and he's like, what's my brother doing with Ghost World? And I was like, what? I get a reference.
Literally, they were talking about the actual book?
I think they were talking about the movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think because she looks a little bit like Thora Birch.
Oh, okay. Got it.
And she she's this computer hacker, so she's kind of geeky and a little different.
That's cute.
But I was really excited that I got it because I've watched Veronica Mars more than once and I've never once picked up on it.
Nice.
So I was pretty excited about that.
Cool.
I was in on a joke reference.
Yeah, you were. I've never watched Veronica Mars.
What?
I don't plan to, but that's fine, right? I'm still an okay person.
It's fine. I love Veronica Mars. I love Kristen.
Go ahead.
Nope, you go.
No, you started saying something. Finish it.
I love Kristen Bell. I think she's great.
She is pretty great. Oh my God.
Her and Dax Shepard are like goals.
Gonna get a divorce real soon.
You think so?
I don't know. They all do, don't they?
I don't know.
But they are really cute.
They are super cute.
And they're funny. It pisses me off that he has a podcast.
Oh, yeah. Like,
get out of that sphere, dude. Don't you have enough?
You hate when famous people have podcasts.
It's such bullshit. They have the ear of everyone already.
That's true.
Fuck off.
Go back to your acting.
Yeah, go back to your fucking network television. Bullshit. I've been working my way through Twin Peaks these last couple weeks.
Okay.
I had never finished it before.
I've never made it through all of season one.
I'm still in season one and I want to finish it soon.
Okay.
I think I have like a couple more episodes, but I'm like hooked. I have to know what happens.
I used to live up by where they filmed it.
In Washington?
Yep.
Yeah, it's very Washington-y.
It is very Washingtonian. Washingtonian? It's very Washington.
Yeah, it's got a lot of ferns. There's a lot of mist.
Yep.
Big
rivers. Gotta love depressing Washington.
God, I do, though. I love the gloom.
I used to love the gloom until I realized the sun makes me really happy.
So, that's bullshit.
You know.
That's fine. You can keep your sunshine.
Yeah, I think I will. I'm very happy in the sun.
You're so mainstream.
Super I'm not a vampire anymore.
Well, you're still white like one.
That's true. I'm very pale.
You are.
I kind of only turn pale and red, so yeah. Those are kind of my only options.
Did I tell you about my gnarly sunburn that I got a couple weeks ago?
Kind of.
Did I send you the video of me peeling my skin off?
Yes, you did. A huge pancake sheet of it.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, wasn't it?
Yeah, you're like, do you want to vomit? And then the video came through, and I was actually like, oh, that is fantastic. Like, I almost wish I had a sunburn so I could peel it.
So we could peel it together.
It, like, there's like some kind of weird joy in peeling skin.
Especially if you can get a nice big sheet off.
Yeah, and it doesn't break.
Yeah, it was good. I was peeling my legs on my father-in-law's back porch.
Okay, wow.
And he was so grossed out. He kept saying he was going to puke. It was funny.
It's a little gross, but...
But so satisfying.
So satisfying. I don't think I would like it if you like left your pancakes around my house. That would gross me out. But
yeah,
if it's like my own skin, I'm cool.
Yeah, there you go.
Do you want to hear about our author?
Yes. What's his name again?
Daniel Klaus.
Okay.
He was born April 14th, 1961 in Chicago.
Ah.
His mother was an auto mechanic.
Cool.
And his father was a furniture craftsman.
I love these people.
His mom was Jewish and his father was from a reserved waspish Pennsylvania family.
Mm.
So I asked you earlier if you knew what they were because I didn't.
They're very... my understanding of waspy people is that they are very... I can't think of any words tonight. What is that word? Repressed.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw they were wealthy and influential.
Yeah. So he probably got judged hardcore for being a furniture maker.
Maybe. It says, like, Daniel didn't grow up religious or anything, so I don't know if it's like his dad was the black sheep and left the family.
Cool.
I don't know. Anyway.
That would make sense.
Daniel Klaus's illustrations have appeared in the New Yorker, Newsweek, Vogue, The Village Voice, and a lot of other places. Along with filmmaker Terry Zwigoff. Okay. They both adapted Ghost World and another 8-Ball story in 2006, which is Art School Confidential. So they have
they made that a movie?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep. His comics and graphic novels and films have received numerous awards, including a Penn Award for Outstanding Work in Graphic Literature, over a dozen Harvey and Einstein Awards, and this is actually the very first graphic novel slash comic to be nominated for an Oscar for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Very cool.
It's super cool. It says that his work emerged in the late 80s and 90s in North America, kind of the North American alternative comic scene, and it played a really important role in comics for achieving a new level of respect from reviewers, academics, and readers.
Mm.
And Ghost World was among the earliest American literary comics to be marketed and sold through conventional bookstores as a graphic novel.
Wow. I had no idea it was that influential.
It's like really influential.
I'm glad I got it on my bookshelf now. I feel like I was missing something before. Do you know the difference between a graphic novel and a comic book?
Is it the length?
Kind of. I had to look it up because I didn't know.
Okay, I don't
know. Because I've never read either of those. I mean, I read like Archie comics when I was a kid.
Okay.
But a comic book is serialized. And a graphic novel is generally released as like one release.
Okay. I didn't know that.
I didn't either. So I guess this one was written in or it was released in three different issues of what's his magazine? You said it a minute ago.
8-Ball.
Yeah. So I think he released it in three parts.
Okay.
And then they re-released it as a graphic novel.
That's cool.
Yeah. I thought it was really interesting. So it's almost like a hybrid.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Something else I found out that I had no idea. So in December of 2013, Shia LaBeouf's short film HowardCantor.com became available online. Soon thereafter, those familiar with indie comics noticed its remarkable resemblance to Justin M. Demino, a comic Klaus contributed to in 2008 charity anthology The Book of Other People. The short film was then removed by LaBeouf, who claimed that he was not copying Klaus, but rather was inspired by him and got lost in the creative process.
AKA, he accidentally memorized it and basically repeated it.
So it says, LaBeouf later issued several apologies on Twitter, writing, "In my excitement and naivete as an amateur filmmaker, I got lost in the creative process and neglected to follow proper accreditation, and I deeply regret the manner in which these events have unfolded and want Daniel Klaus to know that I have a great respect for his work." Klaus responded by saying, "The first I ever heard of the film was this morning when someone sent me a link. I've never spoken to or met Mr. LaBeouf. I actually can't imagine what was going through his mind." And it says, legal representation of Klaus also sent a cease and desist letter to LaBeouf concerning another tweet stating he intended to make a second film plagiarizing Klaus.
Oh, Shia.
So I thought that was kind of interesting. I mean,
I never cease to be amazed by just the level of insanity that comes out of his mouth sometimes.
Like, does he think, oh, this is so obscure, no one's gonna notice?
He's probably so like narcissistic that he didn't even think about it,
that he didn't like read somebody's work, purposely copy it and think it's okay. Like, I don't understand.
Probably not.
So
I don't think people like him really think that shit through.
Probably not. It was just like this weird, crazy thing that came up when I was reading about Daniel Klaus. So
I had no idea. That's strange.
I was like, oh, Shia LaBeouf. Because as I'm like scrolling down, I saw his name. I'm like, what the hell does he have to do with anything?
That's amazing. Shia strikes again.
Evidently, it's plagiarism.
Of course. Have you seen Nymphomaniac?
I have not. Okay. Have you?
I have.
How is it?
It's really good. I cried.
Oh.
It's like good.
Isn't it just basically mainstream porn?
No, it's like indie porn.
Oh, okay.
Not mainstream porn.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's I don't know. It's really good.
Huh.
I didn't think I liked the guy who directed it, whose name is Lars von Trier.
Okay.
Cuz I saw one of his other movies and I didn't like it. But Shia was actually pretty good in it.
Are there, like, all I remember is like a controversy around it of him, like he had a girlfriend and he was having sex with this actress and something like that.
I mean, I don't know.
Are there two parts to it?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's volume 1 and 2.
Okay.
But Stellan Skarsgård is in it and he's really good.
Well, then I might watch it.
Yeah. It's, if you are feeling depressed and want to be more depressed. Oh. But then uplifted.
Okay.
Watch it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I'll probably never watch it. Do you generally like indie movies?
I honestly don't know if I've really seen that many.
Okay.
What are we talking about as an indie movie?
Ghost World.
Are we talking about like... Okay. Are we talking about like... I don't know. Low budget?
Sure.
Not
like there's not a big studio behind them.
Well, even this one had a big studio behind it because United Artists was a branch of MGM.
Oh.
It's just United Artists was MGM's failed indie label, basically.
It's actually the first movie that I think it's John Malkovich's company produced.
What's that? Do you know the name of that? Because I don't.
Hold on. Let me make sure that's what I'm thinking. This actually...
Go ahead.
I'm trying to... Oh, yeah. This movie made no money.
Is that the point of indie movies?
To make no money? I don't think so.
I know. I guess that's true.
Yeah, this is the first film from John Malkovich's production company, Mr. Mudd.
Huh. Interesting.
So.
Ask the question again. Because now I think I have an answer.
Okay. Do you generally like indie movies?
I think that, I mean, I like any movie that doesn't suck. But I think my problem is mostly that I don't, please don't choke on your alcohol.
It almost came out my nose. I think most people don't like movies that suck.
I don't know. There's some sucky movies that I like, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that I will give a lot of movies a chance. It's just the fact that I don't really hear about as many indie movies as I probably would like to.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Gone are the days when I could walk through a Blockbuster and be like, wow, this looks super indie. I think I need to rent it so that I seem so off the grid and cool. Even though I'm renting a movie from Blockbuster in this scenario, I don't know.
I had never heard of this comic or movie until you said you wanted to do it. So
that's a lie.
That's not a lie.
Even when you were walking through Hollywood Video.
Nope. Nothing.
How many other defunct video chains are there that we can name? Hollywood, Blockbuster. That's it.
Well, you a lot of times had the weird little video stores next to like liquor stores.
Yeah, those I liked.
And like the strip malls.
Those were cool.
Yeah. So those are the only ones I know about.
I can't believe you didn't know about this movie before.
Nope, never heard of it.
Well, thank you for agreeing to do it, even though you hadn't heard of it.
Yeah, at first I thought it was literally about ghosts. So I'm like, sure, that's great. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, oh, fuck. A coming of age story.
I was like, all right, could be good.
You were like, oh, the one movie Scarlett Johansson isn't cast as a sex toy in.
Do you know why?
Why? Because she was 16.
15.
15. She and I were actually right around the same age when this was filmed. I think she was born the same age.
The same age as us.
Fuck, same year as us. This apple cider vinegar is really hitting my brain cells.
She was born the same age as us. ScarJo.
In the same age.
She was born in 1984.
Oh, so she's older than we are.
Barely. November 22nd.
Got it.
Okay, so this movie was written... I'm moving on. This movie was written and directed by Daniel Klaus and Terry Zwigoff. Terry also directed the film. He is known for Crumb, which is a documentary. Bad Santa, which I had no idea he directed.
Yeah, I didn't. I knew his name, but I didn't know from where.
I had no idea. And Art School Confidential, like I said earlier, which is another one of Klaus' comics. This movie stars Thora Birch as Enid, Scarlett Johansson as Rebecca, Steve Buscemi as Seymour, Brad Renfro as Josh, and Bob Balaban, I don't know, as Enid's dad. I know who he is, but I can't say his name for shit.
Baby Brad Renfro.
I know.
He was real cute in this movie.
R.I.P. though, right?
Yeah.
Man.
He died a bloated Hollywood death, didn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
I really liked him.
He was great in this movie.
He was. He was great in a lot of things he did.
I couldn't name any of his other movies.
Apt People. Tom and Huck. The Cure.
Are we going to do
The Cure?
Apt People at some point? The Cure.
The Cure. The Cure. The Cure.
Oh, The Cure. Was that with the little boy from Jurassic Park?
I think so.
Yeah.
The Client.
Oh, yeah. I know that one.
Okay. He was in a lot of stuff.
He was. Well, that's what happens to child stars.
Evidently. So sad. He was only 25 when he died, by the way.
Oh my God, he looked like he was like 40.
Okay, so do you want to do the plot?
Oh shit, I forgot I was supposed to do that.
All you have to do is read it. You've not always even finished books, so I almost put pop quizzes in here to see if you read it because it's 80 pages. And if you skipped, I was going to be pissed.
You should have put a pop quiz in. That would have been fun.
I might start doing it.
There's only one book I haven't finished.
Mm-mm. I feel like there's more than one. What's the one you think?
Girl with All the Gifts.
You also didn't finish Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, yeah. I skipped the middle.
Yeah, you did.
But only like a couple hundred pages.
Only a couple hundred. No big deal. Yeah.
Okay. Are you ready?
You might need pop quizzes. Yeah, I'm ready.
Ghost World follows the day-to-day lives of best friends Enid Coleslaw and Rebecca Doppelmayr, two cynical, pseudo-intellectual, and intermittently witty teenage girls who have recently graduated from high school in the early 1990s. They spend their days wandering aimlessly around their unnamed American town, criticizing popular culture and the people they encounter while wandering. Nope. And the people they encounter while wondering what they will do for the rest of their days. As the comic progresses and Enid and Rebecca make the transition into adulthood, the two develop tensions and drift apart.
Bravo.
There you go.
That's all I wanted you to do.
Are you happy now?
I am.
I knew. You know what sucks is I was sitting there on my couch going over my notes. I was like, I'm forgetting something.
The plot.
Maybe like half of the most important things.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay, so I've got some fun facts for you.
Let's do it.
All right. Did you know that Enid Coleslaw is an anagram of Daniel Clowes?
Oh, that makes sense.
He said he based Enid off of himself. He has the same confusion, self-doubt, and identity issues.
Okay.
And Terry Zweigoff said he based Seymour on himself, even using his own record and memorabilia collection as Seymour's.
Cute.
And he actually talks about in an interview, he had to, like, the production team was annoyed with him because they had to go back and get all the releases from, like, every single person in a photograph, including the photographer, of anything in the scene to use it in the movie.
I don't understand.
They had to get, like, permission to use stuff. So if it was, like, a band, they had to go get everybody to sign off that it's okay to use it.
That's horrible.
Yeah, they said they were very frustrated and that's what he wanted. So
I would have been pissed.
That's what they got.
If I was that production assistant.
Yeah, I think a lot of things like in the interviews that seemed like if I had worked for production, I would have been annoyed at the things they wanted because it's like it makes the movie better, I guess. But it would have been annoying.
Did you notice the HR Puffin stuff poster in Enid's bedroom?
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, and now that song has been stuck in my head for the last 2 weeks.
I bet it has.
Yep.
It took 5 years of pitching this movie before a studio picked up the script. And the studios wanted Russell Crowe or Harrison Ford, even Nathan Lane, to be cast as Seymour.
No.
They also wanted Jennifer Love Hewitt, Alicia Silverstone, or Claire Danes as Enid.
Listen, wait a minute. I can totally see Russell Crowe as a fucking sexually frustrated nerd.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Maybe were they Nathan thinking? Lane. But
he's too. But he's like. He's Pumbaa.
It says.
From The Lion King.
I think
he's
it
too
was
nice.
Terry said it has to be Steve Buscemi and even threatened to hang himself if he didn't sign on to do this.
Well, that is the guy I want to work for.
So at one point, Christina Ricci was tapped to play Enid, but by the time filming came around, she was too old.
Right.
So, Thorberg.
Sorry, that right sounded wrong. I meant, yeah, that makes sense.
Thora Birch was 18 and Scarlett Johansson was 15 when they filmed.
Got it.
I already mentioned this earlier, but this was the first film to receive an Oscar nomination for Best Adapted Screenplay based on a graphic novel or comic book. And my final trivia thing is, so in the movie, there's this big deal about this poster, this racist poster.
Yeah.
And its original name is the Coon Chicken Inn.
Oh, yeah.
So it was actually a chain of four restaurants founded in 1925, the first in Salt Lake, then Seattle, Portland. The final one would have been Spokane, but it never opened. The Portland, Oregon location closed in 1949, and it is currently Clyde's Prime Rib on Sandy Boulevard.
Oh my God, I have to go there.
And in Seymour's scrapbook, the photo that you see of the location is the Portland location.
Of course it is. So, it's such an indie movie and it's Portland.
I've never been there, but I've driven by it. And it does look like Clyde's Prime Rib does look kind of cool as a building because it almost has like castle turrets.
Oh, weird.
But it also looks like you could get
diseases.
Like, yes.
Yeah. If it's on Sandy Boulevard, then
I don't know how true that is. I'm not slamming this business.
Oh, yeah, I guess we don't want to be.
I have never been there. So,
well, I'm going.
But I think they have specials like $15 prime rib sundaes or something like that.
Okay. I hate prime rib, but I will find something else there.
I want you to go to Clyde's Prime Rib. I want you to get something and I want you to post it on Instagram.
I will do that.
Okay. It is a cool building.
I can't tell you when I will do it, but I will do it.
Okay. It is a cool building, though. So,
very cool.
Anyway, that is the cool stuff I learned. I actually cut this down because there's a ton of really interesting stuff about this movie.
Really?
Yep. And I limited myself to these couple things. So you should be proud of me because I usually
am super proud.
Go crazy.
You can. You can go crazy whenever you want to.
Well, I told myself I could only do five and I think I did six.
Oh, okay.
So.
Very cool.
Anyway, it's your turn
now.
So next on my notes is cinematography and music.
Shit. I don't have anything about that.
Okay.
But I will.
I do have something about fill it in. The music.
Okay.
So they really fought hard to get the soundtrack that they wanted with kind of old bluesy music. And the studio was pushing for them to have NSYNC and Britney Spears. And so I think it's cool that they stuck with what they wanted and went the old fashioned way. And I really liked that. In the opening, Enid's dancing to like that 60s Bollywood stuff. I thought that was a cool way to kind of establish her character as being different.
Yeah, that was really cool. Why would they want that kind of music to actually be in the soundtrack?
But they also wanted Russell Crowe or Harrison Ford as Seymour.
Do they understand anything about real life, those people? They don't, do they?
Jennifer Love Hewitt as Enid? It makes no sense.
It makes zero sense. The song that she gets obsessed to, I think it's called Devil Got My Woman. It's by Skip James. It's really old and it's kind of funny that I just thought it was funny that she listens to it over and over and over again. Like, this song hit her so hard that she just sits there for hours listening to this random ass blues song.
Yeah, I thought, you know, music was an important part because it was such an important part to Seymour.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting how music doesn't play, I don't remember it playing any part in the comic.
That's a good question.
Because Seymour's not really in the comics. He's a made up character for the movie.
Yeah. When they talk about...
like he's kind of an amalgamation of characters.
Yes. When they talk about music in the comic, it's more like... referencing like when Enid has her punk day,
right? But and I feel then, like, yeah, I don't know, I just didn't feel like it was brought up like it is in the film, because even Seymour going to that bar with the blues player and he's seeing the opening act and everyone else is there for the other fake blues players.
Yeah. And in the movie it was interesting, they used really like kind of plasticky generic hip hop and pop music to just create that juxtaposition between what Enid. I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I don't know what you're trying to say. Another cool thing at that garage sale when Enid picks up one of Seymour's records and she's like, "How's this?" and he says it's kind of shit. Terry Zwigoff is in that band.
Oh, that's cute.
I thought it was funny. So,
yeah.
So music plays a really important part in the film.
Yeah.
And I like that they kind of stuck to the old blues, and they were pretty authentic with it. And they fought the studio to get away from... Because I don't... Like, I was reading some reviews about this movie, and it seems like everyone who saw it when it came out, they have, like, such fond, nostalgic memories of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if you would have put the typical pop stuff in it, it would have kind of lost its charm and appeal.
Well, and I don't even understand what purpose it would have served.
No, because they're such outcasts.
Yeah.
That it makes no sense. It would have
completely turned the movie on its head.
Right.
Yeah.
So I like that they fought for what they wanted in this film.
Absolutely. Because in the book, you have, even in that opening scene, you have Enid and... Does she call her Becky or Rebecca? She calls her Becky sometimes.
Yeah.
Does she call her Becky to insult her? Because I find the name Becky to be so insulting sometimes.
Becky.
Exactly.
Her name is Rebecca Doppelmeyer, but I don't know. I think she calls her Becky sometimes. I don't know if it's an insult or I don't know. What could I call you? What could I shorten your name to insult you?
Not a, my name is only four letters.
Usually when you get crabby, I just call you Stabby Abby.
That's longer.
I know. So
there you go.
I don't know.
People
shorten my name. It's two syllables.
Case.
Yeah. All the time. Because two letters is so hard to say.
Like you're so insulted that people call you Case.
I'm not. You don't care. Seriously, it's two letters. Come on.
That extra vowel is a lot of work. Going off of what you're saying, I think that was reflected a lot in the comic. Not necessarily by music, but by like just the media that they consume in general. So, oh my God, your fucking facial expressions, Casey.
Okay. So
you roll your eyes at me.
I didn't roll my eyes.
I
was like looking up trying to think because I read this book like a month ago and I barely remember it.
Okay.
Okay.
So in the book, people are really defined by the media that they consume and the things that they like. Rebecca and Enid are channel surfing and reading some like generic teen magazine. Mm-hmm. You know, and
they have that the comic on TV.
Yes. The comedian, and there's absolutely nothing in it that they can relate to.
Right.
And so I think that you are 100% correct in talking about the music in the movie, because that's really how oh my God. Why can't I form a sentence tonight? I think it connects back to what you were saying about the music in the movie, how it's more genuine and easier to connect to because it's so real.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. There we go.
I don't remember much about like the things they were consuming in the comic.
Yeah.
So me looking up was just trying to rack my brain.
That's fine. I read it
like three different... I'm sorry, you thought I was rolling my eyes.
It's fine.
I wasn't.
Okay. I read it like three different times in... because I kept forgetting what I read.
Yeah.
Because it's been a while.
It's been a while. I don't remember a ton of it.
Yeah.
So I remember certain blips and moments really stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is kind of cool. Like usually... Like you remember like a generalness from a book or something, and there's certain scenes that really stick out from this for me.
Cool. Like what?
Like how shitty Enid is playing pranks on people.
Yeah.
Like that stands out to me a lot. What else? Like the comic and making fun of people, and I think maybe the insecurity of Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's kind of general, but there's a couple times that just stand out to me where she even says like, oh, boys don't like me, and Enid says like horrible things to her.
Enid is mean.
They like really stand out though.
Yeah.
Like in my mind, not just like the general overview of this book, like certain moments and sentences just kind of stick.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Do you have anything on cinematography?
No.
Okay. Do you want to do the themes of the book?
I completely forgot this was how we were organizing our podcast.
It's okay. I wrote some down. I threw away my written notes. So this is obviously one of the themes is kind of coming of age and the adversity to change. They really seem to want to stick with how they are, and they're kind of fighting adulthood, especially Enid. And part of me wondered if she fought it so hard because it seems like she probably never had like a stable childhood and home. Like her dad has obviously had at least three wives. And so just trying to find some sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Not stability, but consistency.
Yeah.
Another one is kind of...
Wait, hold on. I think I agree with you. And I think that's why she's always trying to find her specific... In the book, it's kind of put upon as a style, but she's really trying to find an identity. Yeah. And she really tries to reference... She's always reaching back into the past for that identity, like when she has her punk day. And then they talk about dressing like somebody from the 1940s. And they're like, yeah, but that's a huge pain in the ass. And it's, I feel like that's her attempt at trying to reach back to something that she thinks is really genuine.
She even tries, she says at one point that she only has one happy memory and she tries to live it by going to, is it Caveland?
I don't remember.
Because her dad and his girlfriend or his second wife took her there, but she can't like recreate it. And it's just kind of sad.
Yeah, it's super sad. And
But yeah, she seems to kind of go through her phases, I guess, trying to find a happiness that she doesn't seem to be able to grasp.
Yes, agreed.
Another theme that kind of pops up, I thought, was irony. Like, there's just a bunch of kind of ironic things, especially I thought with the Satanists.
Okay.
Like, everyone, they kind of trash them, and but everyone says, like, how nice they are. And then when they follow them to the grocery store, they're buying Lunchables. And I thought, like, what a common, normal thing to be buying for these supposed Satanists. Like, it...
Right.
I don't know. It just didn't... It doesn't fit. It just seemed kind of ironic that these devil worshippers buy Lunchables to snack on.
Totally. I kind of got that from the movie, too, is that I don't know if it fits with irony, but going off of what you're saying, they use Enid and Rebecca use hyperbole so much that it's almost it's almost like nothing means anything anymore because they are constantly overhyping everything that's so mundane.
Right.
It's, and it gets really annoying.
I was trying to put myself back into being 18 and like graduating high school.
Yeah.
And is this my life? Because obviously now I'm 34. I don't relate to this. But I wonder if I would have at 18.
I know I did.
Okay.
Like, I remember relating to it, and now looking back on it, I'm like, God, these girls are so fucking annoying.
They're so annoying. Oh my God, I hated them.
I feel bad, but I totally hated them too.
I hate Enid so much.
Also, Thora Birch never opens her mouth when she talks.
Oh, I didn't notice that. What really bothered me...
She does it
me,
in all of her movies.
Her... dad is like putting jelly on a bagel and it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen because he puts it on one side and then like scrapes it all off and puts it on the other side and then puts them together.
It's a biscuit.
Whatever. I'm so sorry. That makes such a big fucking difference to the story.
Well, I think it does, but go ahead.
I was just... Like, it stuck with me, and I can't figure out why you spread jelly like that. I cannot for the life of me understand what he was doing, and it's, like, all I thought about for a while.
But actually, that's kind of great, because nothing adults do makes sense to teenagers.
That's true. It makes no sense to me.
It's like, why would you ever do it that way?
I don't even know why I was so distracted by it. Like, I was really focused on this. Because
it's you. It's you. That's why.
I'm sure they were having a really important conversation. I'm so focused on how he's spreading this jelly.
They weren't having an important conversation. It was just about what's her face coming back.
Oh, the girlfriend? Stupid.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Enid acting like a brat. Going back to what we were just talking about with Enid, though, with her clinging on to the past and whatnot, mm-hmm. in the movie, what is it called? Coon's Chicken?
So it was Coon's Chicken, and then they changed it to Cook's Chicken. Like, that's supposedly right. through history, it was changed.
It's so. Interesting that she, like, holds on to the past or idealizes the past so much when history is so complicated and there are no simple times in history. Mm-hmm. There just aren't. And I think in the movie, that's a big part of her. Well, I kind of don't think she grew up in the movie either, but I think that's the audience's way of seeing, yeah, let's not idealize all this bullshit and just move on.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
Sorry if that was out of order.
No, no, it's totally not. I keep wondering. I don't know.
Go ahead. No, say it.
I can't relate to this movie. I can't. I don't understand it.
At all?
I mean, I kind of get it, but I don't get the appeal of it.
Oh, the appeal of the movie?
The appeal, the point, the enjoyment, like, I just don't get it.
Well, Mullet Guy was pretty appealing.
There's moments that I like. There's an overall theme that I like that we didn't talk about. But just in general, like, I didn't enjoy this and I couldn't wait for it to be over.
Oh, okay.
I didn't enjoy the characters. I didn't enjoy a lot of it.
None of them?
I mean, I like Seymour.
That's me too, yeah.
But
what was the other theme you were going to bring up?
The breakdown of friendship.
Yeah, and that's a big one.
I thought this, like, I really liked the, like, authentic, subtle way that their friendship just comes apart.
Yeah.
There's no one big thing.
Uh-huh.
And how many friends have you lost in this subtle manner?
Yeah, you'd gradually grow apart.
Right, and there's nothing that makes you not be friends. There's no falling out. You just change and slowly lose touch. And I think, yeah, I did enjoy that aspect of it. And I thought mm-hmm. the film did it really well also.
You know what, like, I loved it. Oh, go ahead.
I thought there was a little more of a conflict in the comic.
Yeah, especially with both of them showing up at Josh's house.
That, and then the whole college thing.
Yeah, Enid was the one who was going to go to college, right?
Right. And then Rebecca's like, well, I'm not going to go, but I'll move there with you. And then they realize, like, we're not friends anymore.
Yeah, in the movie, they kind of switched roles a little bit.
And part of me, like, I didn't understand why Rebecca was friends with Enid. Like, Enid's such a bad person. In my eyes.
I don't know if she is, because, well, I mean, she's not great. But she's also pretty standard. Like,
she's a shit friend.
But how many times were you a shitty friend when you were 18?
Probably a lot, but...
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, how much of it can we really hold against her?
But I feel like she... I mean, it's partially Rebecca's fault because she goes along with it. But Enid does, like, these horrible things and everyone just is kind of there. And... Like, it doesn't seem like she wants to go along with this stuff, like pranking Seymour. That was a horrible, horrible thing to do. I never in my life would have done that.
No, I wouldn't either, just because I didn't think of it, though.
I thought it was so mean.
Yeah, it's mean. But also, how lame is it that you're putting in a fucking want ad?
But people did that then. All the time.
You're putting your phone number on a public forum. Prepare to be pranked.
I just, yeah, maybe, but not to that extent.
It was really mean.
Yeah, and they all sat there and watched him and laughed.
I thought it was worse at the end, though, when Enid gets Seymour to break up with his girlfriend, essentially.
Yeah, Enid's horrible. She's the worst.
And then run. and runs off. But it's kind of funny, right?
She's the literal worst.
I'm really pissed that they didn't show more of the sex scene with Steve Buscemi. I was really excited to finally know what it would have been like to have sex with him. It was just a bullshit fade to black scene. It wasn't fair.
Oh, it was a Twilight moment.
It was. Hold on, I have one more thing to say. Oh. Yeah, going back to the bad friend thing, too. Enid and Rebecca are getting ready to move into an apartment in the movie. And Enid totally bails on Rebecca. And Rebecca's stuck with this apartment.
Because Enid's the worst.
But here's my real question. Even back then, could you have afforded a whole apartment by yourself on a barista salary?
No.
Maybe we could have. Maybe that was the joy of the 90s. You couldn't
because I was.
Oh, like, okay.
There's no way I could have.
No. Yeah, I couldn't either.
I looked at getting an apartment with three of my friends that I could afford. Three people.
Same. And
when I finally moved out, it was with five people.
Yeah, it's totally unrealistic.
It's unrealistic 100% that you could have afforded that on your own.
At any point in time.
Yeah, there's no way. By the way, when I moved out and did this, it was like 2004. So it's not that long after this movie.
Yeah.
There's no way. So once more, shit friend, Enid's the worst.
Enid does suck. I'm coming over to your side. Enid sucks. I was reading it as funny, but
I didn't think it was funny.
Oh, God. Okay.
I just thought she's like a horrible person.
Yeah, she's not.
It's okay if you think it's funny. I just thought like her pranks and stuff were mean. I didn't think it was funny.
They were incredibly mean.
But you're like, yeah, you should do that.
But I'm like, that's hilarious.
Even following the people, like after they leave the, yeah, after they leave the diner, like that's a little much. We were just talking about stalkers.
Oh, yeah, we were.
And saying how crazy it is when people stalk other people.
I can't think of a time when I ever did anything that odd.
Like, I get it was funny to, like, call and prank people, but to go to the extent that they went to, it's just so far.
It's interesting that you say that because there's another point in the book where pushing boundaries is a big deal, and that's when John Ellis brings the pedophile into the cafe.
Oh, yeah.
And they talk about computer-generated kitty porn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how far outside the norm can you really get? Like, there's a limit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. At some point, you just become a terrible fucking person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
I kind of forgot about him. It was horrible.
He was terrible.
Was he a priest?
No.
He worked with... Are you sure?
I can look it up. Hold on.
Can you look it up?
Yeah. He's an ex-Catholic priest, so you are right.
Okay. I thought it was like a priest or something horrible. Not that Catholic priests are horrible. I just meant like...
They are. It's fine.
With access to children.
My point was, it's just interesting because these kids are trying to push all these boundaries, but they don't realize, maybe they don't realize the ramifications of all the shit that they're doing.
Yeah, I think like it's a good part of growing up because you don't realize quite the significance of your actions.
Yeah.
And what they have on other people.
Yeah. And that guy in the book, by the way, in case anybody's wondering, does end up getting arrested for molesting children. So
I didn't remember that.
Yeah. There are very real consequences for these boundaries that they push.
Mm-hmm. I feel like there's no real consequences for Enid.
She loses her friend.
She pushes her away, though, and she's kind of the one who ends it in the book.
Oh, yeah.
So, do you have any other like themes and stuff from the book or the movie or whatever?
I don't think not anything I really want to get into any further than we already have.
Okay. So I kind of wrote down some things about the characters.
Okay.
I don't really see much development in Enid in the movie. There's some, but in the book, she does kind of seem to grow up. And I think she probably had like a really rough childhood. And this, she always kind of comes second to her dad's girlfriends and wives.
Yeah.
But the only people who seem to kind of tolerate her and her behavior are her dad, Rebecca, and Josh.
Yeah.
And I think, like, she doesn't fit in, but I can't tell if it's her personality or if that's how she wants it.
That's interesting because when you said rough childhood, that kind of struck me because in the book, so her mom is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
And her dad remarries a couple times, but her life really isn't all that rough. Like, I mean, it's sad, don't get me wrong, but it's pretty banal, like standard struggles that you go through. But
do you think part of the reason she acts the way she does is to get her dad's attention, though?
I think it's more about trying to break the monotony of her life.
Okay.
And I think that's why they go into pushing all those boundaries, too. I think they see how mundane their the lives of the people in their town are, and they're fighting back against that.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think that it very well could be to get her dad's attention. However, she never does, and he's not really around.
I guess instead of rough childhood, I should have said a lonely childhood.
That's true.
I think that would have been a better way for me to put it. I think, yeah, that's how I just saw her as like a sad person.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that.
Okay, she has like really low self-esteem and she seems to hate everybody.
She does, and she loathes herself too.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's interesting that both characters don't have like really parental roles. Even Rebecca lives with her grandmother.
Uh-huh.
And Ina's dad's kind of in his own world doing his own thing. So I wonder if that's part of the reason why they are friends. Is maybe they can kind of relate without having those parental figures.
Yeah, that makes sense.
For Rebecca, I saw a lot more growth. She seems really similar to Enid in the beginning, and she goes along with a lot of Enid's things, but she seems to grow up faster. She seems a lot more mature and quote-unquote normal, like mainstream, than Enid.
In the movie?
And the book. I think. Maybe not.
I 100% agree as far as book Rebecca goes.
Okay.
But yeah, and I think towards the end, she definitely does get there.
Mm-hmm.
And Enid calls her, or she says, "You grew into such a nice young woman," or something like that. It's so ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
She seems to have really low self-esteem as well. Like, she makes a point of saying, like, no boys like me. They always go for you. And I don't know. But I think there's a lot more growth to Rebecca than there is to Enid in the movie. I'm not so sure about the book. They seem to both kind of mature and go their own separate ways.
Yeah.
I think they want different things out of life. Do you have anything else about them?
I had something and now it's gone. It was something about what you just said. And now I don't know why my brain's not working again.
Okay. The other thing with Rebecca is, like, in the comic, she definitely wants to keep everything kind of the same. And she, like, at one point says she's going to go live with Enid at college, even though she doesn't want to go to college.
It's so weird.
And it was super weird. And then I think, like, realizing that Enid doesn't want her kind of leads her to realize that she is putting more and, like, this friendship means more to her than it does to Enid. And it kind of makes her realize that their friendship isn't really there anymore. And that's so their sad. Relationship kind of falls apart at that point.
Yeah.
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 Okay. That's all I had.
Okay.
For differences, I didn't really write anything down because, I mean, they're so different. This is such a loose adaptation. And I think the comic was more of a starting point than a guide.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't write down the differences because I feel like they're really two different things.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay. It would have been like the whole movie listed if I did book right, versus exactly. movie.
But so. I did like that some of the, you know, the changes that were in the movie. Like, I love that Seymour was
a bigger 100%. Part.
And that he wasn't just a psychic.
Yes.
Because in the book, he was this weird psychic. I don't know. That was odd.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I liked the book a lot, but I really did like the changes that they made.
Mm-hmm. I thought they did really good with that.
With that part of it.
With that aspect of the film.
Yes.
Do you have other stuff?
I have a lot of stuff, but I feel like it didn't fit anywhere where we were talking, and I completely forgot that we had a framework that we were going off of.
That's fine.
I totally forgot. Because I was actually sitting here there trying to do my notes, and I was like, God, how am I going to do this? I guess I'll just do it in order.
Okay.
So I'm really sorry that
no.
I totally forgot. What did you make of the title?
That is actually one of my questions.
Yay!
It is, what do you think the title means? I felt like they are kind of going through this world where they're just surrounded by what they see as like ghosts of people.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's even slightly on track.
It is. It's 100% on track.
Is that what you think?
Yeah, I think that's why we got so many references to those like empty, like in the beginning of the movie and even in the beginning of the book, you have so much emphasis on television. Mm-hmm. People are like completely numb.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just going through life like half asleep.
Yeah.
I think it points to a lot of lost potential.
Oh, yeah.
And if we take a certain path in life, apathy is kind of bound to take hold.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of end up living a shadow of a life almost. Did you read anything about the illustrations, too, about the colors that he used?
Oh, I didn't.
So in the initial edition, I don't know if it was in the first publication or the second one, he used this really like light blue color.
Hmm.
And he said that he wanted to kind of give the feeling of somebody walking home at twilight.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I thought was really interesting. And he did mention the glow of televisions coming out of people's homes, which is really interesting. Our edition is green.
Mm-hmm.
Yours is green, right?
I think so.
Yeah, mine's all green. I guess
same edition.
Yeah. I guess one of them was accidentally printed in orange or something at one point.
Hmm.
And it was a total mistake on the publisher's part.
Oops.
So that kind of fucks up the message a little. So
that's really interesting.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really thoughtful.
Right? He's a great... I want to read his other books.
I want to read the art one. The Art of...
Yeah.
Confidentiality? Confidential?
Art School Confidential?
Yes, that is it.
Yeah, I think that one's in my Amazon cart right now.
It's a movie, too, so it could be another episode.
It could. That would be fun.
Yeah.
And I won't forget that we actually have a way that we do our episodes.
We do have an outline.
So I won't forget about that.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm. So anyway.
What else you got?
That was it.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's all you have?
Yeah.
You said you had more stuff that didn't fit. What else you got?
Well, I don't know how to fit it into our conversation. I don't have any more questions. Do you?
Well, yeah, of course I have questions. I always have questions. But okay. No, I really want to know what else you have.
I don't have anything else.
I'll cut it out if it's worthless.
In the ending, was she a grown-up or did she just finally find a style that worked for her? Because it almost looked like she was a grown-up walking through town.
I don't know.
I couldn't tell if she decided to go with that, like, 30s or 40s look.
or if that's just what she, like 20 years later, that's where she is.
Yeah, and maybe that's why she said, you've grown into such a lovely young woman. I couldn't tell.
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question, though.
As far as the book goes overall, it was really astounding to me how well he captured the experience of being a young woman. I mean, I guess you could apply their experience to being a young man, too, but it was almost eerie how well, like, they were a lot like me and my friends when I was that age. Mm. So it was just mind-boggling to me how he did that. I thought it was really artful and amazing.
That's awesome.
That's why I cried at the end, because I was like, this is my life.
I did not have that feeling in the slightest. So
that's interesting. That surprises interesting. Me.
Yeah. Does it? When you first like pitched this idea, you're like, oh my gosh, this is us. And reading it, I was like, no, this is not me.
That makes me feel a little bit bad.
No, you shouldn't. I think that's cool that you really related to it. And I didn't.
Maybe that's why I thought it was funnier than you did.
Maybe.
Because I relate to their sense of humor.
Okay. I didn't. So.
You're too nice.
Evidently.
And I'm just a bitch.
That's not true. I'm sure I got up to plenty of horrible things. I just didn't.
You just don't remember them because they were too much fun.
Maybe. I just feel like I've always tried to be like respectful of other people's lives and kind of like stay in my own bubble.
Yeah.
And I try not to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Like, even as a teenager, like, I don't think I.
You tried not to impose on other people.
Right. Yep. So. I just, yeah, I didn't. Like, I related to the, like, friendship part of this, but not to them as people.
That makes sense. I get that.
Okay.
Do you want to do your final thoughts?
I have some other questions.
Oh, go for it.
Well, some of these you already answered. Do you relate to any of the characters, which you do?
Yes, I do.
Do you think you would have felt different about this movie or book if you would have seen or read it at a younger age?
I saw it when it first came out.
Okay.
So, but I remember I only vaguely remember the books or the movie, so it wasn't like it was something that became my favorite movie or anything like that.
Okay.
But I do remember even at that age being a little bit bored because it was way too fucking long.
Yeah, it was really boring to me.
Yeah, it was a boring movie.
Reading reviews, because I read a bunch of reviews of people at like the 10 and the 15 year mark.
Okay.
And one person said, like, this has been my favorite movie since I first watched it in the theater. Rewatching it now, I like respect and love it so much more. And I just don't get it because I don't have those feelings towards this movie at all.
Yeah. I think if I had been even younger, maybe I would have liked it more, like how I feel about like Empire Records or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Those are some of my favorite movies, or that is one of my favorite movies.
So if you would have saw this at like 14, 15?
Maybe, because then you would have been looking up to Enid and Rebecca instead of looking down on Enid and Rebecca.
Yeah, because I definitely looked down on them.
I know, I did to a certain degree as well, so.
Kind of my final question is, what's up with the bus that Enid gets on at the end? Is this a death bus? Like, I don't understand the bus that never comes.
I was actually going to say, I read somewhere, I thought that when you get on a public bus in cinema, it's a, like at the end of a movie, it's a metaphor for suicide.
That's what I thought. And then I read that that's not what their intention was.
What was their intention?
It doesn't say. Like, one thing said the studio wanted to put, like, next stop art school.
Ew.
So stupid. But what, I thought,
with Britney Spears playing in the background?
I really thought that this is, like, her dying.
Well, it could be a metaphorical death in the sense that, you know,
the child is dying. Like, the adolescent, she's becoming a lovely young woman.
Right. But also, I had a lot written down in my notes about apathy. Mm-hmm. And that is its own form of death. So if she's going into adulthood and she still hasn't found her identity and she still hasn't mm-hmm. really cemented who she is, then she's going to fall into that pattern of apathy just like everybody else around her does.
I just, like, it felt real Grim Reaper-ish to me almost. Like this.
I like that reading of it.
Old man gets on the bus and disappears and then she does.
Yeah. I think that's...
I wasn't sure what to make of it and I didn't know what you thought of it.
I agree with you. And honestly, if they say that wasn't their intention and then don't tell you what the intention was, then they're leaving it open to interpretation and they could have fucked themselves.
I could have just missed it. I didn't see what their intention was. It just said, like, that wasn't the intention. So I keep hitting my mic. Sorry.
If that wasn't their intention, they should have made their intention more clear.
Like putting Next Stop Art School on the back.
Sure.
Which would have been stupid.
God, it would have been so much worse.
It would have been. I kind of like the thought that she's... I don't want her to die. I just kind of like the thought that, like, that's the end of this chapter of her life, whatever that means.
Yeah. So I agree.
Okay. Those are the only questions I had.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any more questions. Sorry. But that also, that whole death metaphor goes into the title, too.
That's true.
You know,
the other interesting, there's no bus at the end of the comics.
That's true.
That does not happen.
What does she do at the end?
She goes to college?
No, there is a bus.
There is?
Yeah. Can you see? Do you see it? No.
Okay.
She walks past the cafe and then it shows her getting on a bus.
Oh, okay.
And the bus driving away.
Is there, like, a big thing about the bus that doesn't come anymore?
In the book?
Yeah.
No. Oh, yeah, there is.
Hold on. Remember there's, like, a thing on a sidewalk where kids, like, wrote their name or something.
Yeah.
But I don't remember it being a bus stop.
Hold on. Let me see if I can find it. I will say in the movie, one scene that I loved was when they go into the sex store.
Oh, yeah.
And it's her and Josh, right? I think.
Her and Seymour.
Oh, Enid and Seymour. That's right.
In the movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're in there and all these, like, chubby middle-aged guys look up and all I could and, like, see them come into the store and they're like, what is this young girl doing here? But all I could think was, like, this is what every chat room in the 90s looked like on the other side of the computer.
100%. What's interesting is they didn't mean to, but one of the guys in the porn shop is also the principal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And so perfect.
It's so perfect.
Okay. There is a bus stop. There he is, as always. I know that bus line got rerouted like 5 years ago. And then there's Norman written on the sidewalk.
Okay, I remember the Norman part. I just didn't feel like it was such a big thing in the comic as it was.
Yeah, it's just one mention.
In the movie, like, because it repeats over and over, this bus stop and this man sitting there.
Yeah. And then Enid finally says something to him, and mm-hmm. I don't remember what he says in response, but it's something like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because you're a young person.
Mm-hmm. Because old people always know better.
Obviously.
Especially people in their 30s.
I think 34 is like right around the right age where you start to just really hone in and know everything.
Of course. Next year, it'll be 35.
35 will just be so full of knowledge.
Uh-huh. That's the perfect age.
Anyway.
Okay. Final thoughts?
Yeah.
Do you want
me to go first?
Sure.
So I really liked the comic. I liked the artwork.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's really good. And I loved how, oddly enough, how much I could relate to the characters and the struggles that they go through. Mm-hmm. And same for the movie. I relate to them in some ways because I acted like an asshole sometimes. But the movie was just too long and too boring. And it probably won't go in my to watch again mm-hmm. file. But yeah. I will definitely keep the book and I want to read his other books.
Yeah, definitely. That's all you
That's
got?
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wait. I thought the movie was well cast, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, sure. Really well cast. We didn't talk about how Thora Birch was in Hocus Pocus, but that's fine.
Do you want to talk about how she's in Hocus Pocus?
No,
the greatest Halloween movie of all time.
Of all time.
1 year, I really want us to go as the Sanderson sisters, and you got to get Katie on board, too, because...
God, it would be perfect.
We need a blonde.
We do need a blonde. Anyway, yeah, I really did like the casting, and I thought the acting was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, Thora Birch does get on my nerves a little bit sometimes, but yeah.
I don't remember, like, a bunch of things that she's in.
American Beauty.
I don't remember much of that movie.
I remember her boobs.
I remember boobs.
Yeah, she got big old boobs.
Okay.
I think she has pretty big nipples, too, I'll be honest. From what I remember, I don't know.
Okay.
You know Baloney Barb in Pitch Perfect?
Yes.
I think maybe they're on the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad they cast her, but I think Christina Ricci could have been great in this role, too.
I feel like Christina Ricci, yeah, she might have done a slightly better job.
Maybe.
But I think Thora Birch is so monotone and flat that I think that might have been what they were going for.
Yeah. I think ScarJo did a great job, too.
Yeah, I was surprised at how...
Not being a sex symbol, not showing her boobs.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. She did really well.
I actually appreciated her as an actor in this movie.
Yeah, and at 15. Yeah. Crazy.
Right? Man.
Steve Buscemi, genius.
Totally amazing.
I don't think anyone could have been a better Seymour.
No, he was perfect. He looks like somebody named Seymour.
Yeah, he does.
And he 100%. Looks like he would hang out with old record collecting geeks.
And evidently young teenage girls.
I mean, who? Yeah, I guess.
Okay, so my kind of final things are I wanted more of the comic. Like, I wasn't ready for it to end.
Yeah.
I turned the page and all of a sudden it was over.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, I'm not done with this story.
Yeah.
It seemed kind of abrupt.
Totally.
So I guess that's good. Leave them wanting more.
Yep. I'm sure that's what Daniel Klaus is thinking when he ended this
but
comic.
I think like it was a good end to like an adolescence. Like it's just kind of done. It's time to grow up.
Yep.
It's kind
and you
of,
never quite feel fulfilled.
It's kind of abrupt, like the transition between like adolescence and adulthood, like even high school and college.
Yeah.
You're just kind of in it. Maybe it was different. Like I went to community college for a while and I did not graduate. So like from high school to being adult was kind of abrupt.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I found the movie really boring, but I enjoyed Seymour so much.
Do you feel like it was just too long? Or do you think overall it was super boring because you couldn't connect to any of the characters?
Both. I wanted something to happen.
Oh, okay.
And nothing. Like, it's just generally someone's life.
Right. And indie movies tend to sometimes do that.
Right. I don't think I'm a huge fan of indie movies.
Okay. Yeah.
So I think that's part of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say I only like blockbusters, but...
But Sahara.
Sahara. I just want something to happen.
You need a story arc.
Yes, I do.
I think that's reasonable.
Okay. I think my favorite thing about the comic and the movie, it's such a great depiction of how subtly a friendship can unravel.
Yeah.
And I really, really enjoyed and connected to that part.
Yes, I agree with you. And I didn't even register it until you said that.
Like, that's the biggest thing I took away from this.
Yeah. And it's artful how, like...
It's beautifully done.
It is, yes.
And it's so authentic that like the way he captured it is just, it's really genius.
Agreed.
So thumbs up on that point for me. I don't think I would ever watch this movie again. I do want to read his other work. I don't know that I would read this again.
Okay.
But it was short, so should give it a go.
Yeah, I definitely recommend the comic.
Yeah, it's well done.
Yeah.
And it's quick.
And I thought it was a good way to dip my toe into the world of graphic novels, too, because, you know, it's not overly long. Because I've heard that, what is it, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is like 400 and something pages.
Oh. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but.
That was on my list of things for us to do until I read PP&Z.
Oh.
And that book killed me.
Wait a minute. Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, was that not
it's by the same book? Guy.
Oh, so it's a novel. What book am I thinking of?
Are you sure it's, is it a graphic novel or did he just write a novel?
I think he wrote a novel. I'm thinking of something else. I'm sorry. Maybe it was like some like something about Jack the Ripper.
Okay, well, those are the same thing, so I can see how you would get it confused.
Right, exactly. You know, the top hats is what it is. Anyway, I thought this was a good introduction into the world of graphic novels, and I really want to read more of them, was my whole point.
I agree. I don't see any let's see. I don't know. I Googled 400-page graphic novel, but I don't know.
Hold on. I could tell you. I think it's in my list anyway. I ran across it in my travels. I don't know what it was called. Sorry.
Okay.
Cut all this out, I guess.
Well, it's not Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
It's not.
I think that's a book by Seth Graham Smith.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Who wrote PP&Z that I wanted to kill myself and you skipped half the book.
You're never going to forgive me for it, are you?
Not really. Because I read it.
Am I going to have to like have it engraved on my tombstone?
I might just throw in
200 pages of PP&Z.
Pop quizzes so I know that you read a book.
Most of the time I read the books.
Yeah, if they're 80 pages.
Out of 14 books, I've only skipped half of two.
Okay, but that's so
that's like 102% success rate.
I don't think that's how that works.
Okay. And next time I will remember that we have a formula that we follow.
Yeah, we came up with this together, so I don't know how you forgot.
I completely forgot. I don't know what my...
We even separated it out into things you were supposed to do.
I know. I don't know what happened. I was sitting there writing my notes like, how am I going to organize this?
Yeah, that was the problem. We struggled with our notes so much, we came up with an outline.
And this is... evidence of what happens when you forget about the outline.
All right. So, are you good?
Yeah.
If you're reading along with us, our next book will be our Halloween episode, and it's Ooh. Will be Let the Right One In by John Lindquist, along with a 2008 Swedish movie. We're not doing the American version, which might have a different name anyway.
It's Let Me In.
Okay. So we're going Swedish on this, and
full Swede.
Yeah, our episode will be out October 21st. We would love to hear from you. You can find us on our website at thelitflixpodcast.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Cheers.